Welcome back to Upfront Soul. I'm your host, Sanguine Fromage, laying down the soulful sounds to which I hope you're getting down. I'm going to let you know quickly how you can find us out there on social media. We are at Upfront Soul on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We love to get your messages through those platforms, and we like to let you know what's coming up on future editions of the show and to keep you informed about milestones in funk, soul, jazz, and civil rights history. I'm excited now to share with you a conversation I had a little while ago with Arturo O'Farrell. He is a pianist, composer, and band leader, and he and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra have brought to us an amazing new album called Virtual Birdland. We will hear about the weekly virtual concerts from which this album was drawn. I know you'll enjoy it. Arturo shares some really thought-provoking meditations on making music during the pandemic. We'll also be featuring more songs from this great album, Virtual Birdland. So please settle in and enjoy my interview with Arturo O'Farrell here on Upfront Soul. I would like to welcome Arturo O'Farrell, who is our guest today on Upfront Soul. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about your wonderful new album, Virtual Birdland, which I've been playing quite a lot on the show. So thank you, Arturo, for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here, and just a fair disclaimer, I am in the People's Republic of Brooklyn. So periodically you might hear an ambulance or a truck back. I mean, I'm just letting folks know that this is real live radio.
Absolutely. And you might hear a fish truck go by with its Jake brakes on in my studio, which backs on a busy road as well. But I first of all want to thank you so much for the Sunday virtual Birdland concerts. They have gotten my family through the pandemic.
That is so beautiful. And I've heard that a lot, and it really does my heart incredible good to know that, because we have seen a horrendous year of suffering, and a lot of people have gathered around campfires that others have built. And I think that Virtual Birdland has been a campfire for so many people, including my musicians, who feel so ratified. I can tell you, if my whole band was here, they'd be thanking you for letting them know that what they've done was meaningful to you. Beautiful words. Thank you, Susan.
Well, it truly has. And I have to credit my husband, who was the one who first found, I think, very, very close to the first show that you put on, those Sunday concerts. And he's been tuning us in every week. And it's just been wonderful for us. I mean, we depend on live music. One of the last things we did was go to a concert, literally the night before the world really shut down. And so being without live music has been painful, on par with not seeing our families. So having you and your musicians bring the music to us has just been an incredible service and a joy to the whole family, including my kids. You know, you really have put together something that's just been of value. And I know I speak for all of us who've been tuning in. It's been a lifeline for sure.
What I've come to realize in this year is that art is to be of service to others. So in a way, the other artists in this venture are the grocery store clerks, the flight attendants, the nurses, the doctors, the people who deliver food. Those people are also, to me, they're co-artists. They use their life in service of others. And I think that's the purpose of paint, dance, music, literature, cinema. It's the purpose is to serve others. And so, I mean, I very humbled by your words. I'm very grateful that you said them today, because it's not easy.
Well, just the technical aspects of putting together those concerts, it's incredible. And then I wondered how, if the process of recording this album was different technically than other albums you've recorded. You have such a far-flung group of musicians that you're working with.
Well, I'm glad that your husband saw some of the first episodes, because that we were blindly groping in the dark when we started this. We began this with just my drummer reading off of the music paper, wow. manuscript paper, alone, without any references.
Wow.
And then after about 2 or 3 months, we figured out how to reference track. We made a reference track with the synthesizer, keyboard, MIDI sounds. So then he began to be able to play against real music, which helped tremendously. Mm. And what happens is, after he gets that scratch track, he records in real time and sends it to our bass player. Now, here's the thing that's tricky. A lot of people think it's false because we're not really playing live to each other, but that's not true. Once our drummer has his part, then the bass player records in real time to a real time recording of a drummer playing a real chart. And then that gets sent to the percussionist, and each percussion also plays as if they were playing in a fresh, new, real-time experience. Then that gets sent to me. I put the piano parts, and then that gets sent to the lead players. And so every additive, every level is really playing in real time to a real-time experience. And then those guys, they play the lead instruments, lead trumpet, lead trombone, lead saxophone, lay down their parts, and then the secondary instruments can match their phrasing and match their. So in a very real sense, it's a very real-time playing experience. And then at the last, very last step, we invite our soloists and our guest artists to join us, and then they're playing to a real full orchestra. So the only person who really starts to process in a strange environment is the drummer. But once it leaves his hands, it is musicians playing with musicians the music they love for people they love. The scary thing for me is that towards the last few months that we did it, it really began to feel like playing in a club, and it began to feel like playing for an audience. And that's kind of the real beautiful thing is, and we had our first performance recently, our very first performance in a club, but not the big band, the octet. But anyway, I looked at the audience and I said, some people think the music resides on this piece of paper. And I held up a piano part. And I said, it does not reside. And then I said, some people think it resides in the musicians. And I pointed to my tenor sax player. I said, it doesn't reside in him either. I said, it actually resides in this relationship of participant, instrumentalist, giver, receiver, receiver becomes giver, giver becomes receiver. And then that loop is where the music exists. That giving and receiving is where that music exists. And in a very real way, in a very substantial way, that giving and receiving is an infinite loop. It's an infinite loop, and it's where the love and the music really exist. And so in a way, if whether you're in a concert hall, whether you're in a jazz club, whether you're listening to something on the radio, or whether you're watching something streamed, the giver and receiver are what creates the relationship, the medium for the art. And it was really shocking to me. And I knew this my whole life anyway, but it was really shocking to me to discover that not only was the band's happiness and joy and familialness in the recording, it was also in the relationship that we have with the people all over the world who tune in.
Was Desert, beautiful track from Virtual Birdland. We're talking with Arturo O'Farrell, who is the band leader of the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. I had the great pleasure of speaking with Arturo about Virtual Birdland, the great new album that has grown out of the weekly virtual concerts that he and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra have been putting on every Sunday. Let's hear more of our talk now here on Upfront Soul.
I knew this my whole life anyway, but it was really shocking to me to discover that not only was the band's happiness and joy and familialness in the recording, it was also in the relationship that we have with the people all over the world who tune in. So Virtual Birdland has been an unbelievably rewarding thing to me. It just has meant so much to me. It has meant so much to me to keep the family together, to keep the musicians. We normally get together the day after and have a little Zoom hang. And, you know, it's just been amazing to keep this family gathered around that campfire and to see it touch the lives of other people. That is the purpose for what we do. That's the reason we are. So thank you for letting us practice the very essence of who we are and why we do what we do.
Well, you know, music in any form is communication, you know, whether it's a live concert or I know I feel that way about radio, and I've heard it from listeners as well, that it feels like a conversation. So for you to manage to facilitate this conversation with people all over the world is really a wonderful thing. And I would think, as you were describing the process and as I understood it, I mean, you haven't been just dealing with one live concert. It's you know, a dozen or more live concerts happening as each musician lays down their live track. I mean, it's the engineering alone just astounds me. The fact that you've managed to create this level of art out of such a difficult technology is astounding, actually.
We have. I really have to single out our video editor, Brian Davis, our second lead video editor, Astrid Asmundson, for doing a very musical job of tiling.
Yeah.
And I also have to say that one of the other great secrets of all of this is that we have a beautiful, beautiful friend, sound engineer, who I've been recording with for, you know, 20 years. Mm. And he's an extraordinary, extraordinary, extraordinary engineer. So between the editors and the engineer and Adam, my son, who inputs and makes a lot of the associate artistic decisions, it's, you know, I have an incredible technical team that brings this thing to life every week. And it's a very labor intensive. I mean, it takes each musician between 4 and 5, sometimes more, 6 hours of recording. So you figure that times 18, I'm not good at math, but that's a lot of hours that go into that process.
Yeah.
But then I know that Brian and Peter and Astrid and Adam and Andrew and the people who actually prepare the actual product takes them 20, 30, 40 hours a week. So we're talking about like something that it really can easily be 80, 90 hours worth of work a week to produce these things. And again, it, you know, it's hard, but it keeps us around the campfire. It keeps us, keeps us there for each other. And that is by far the most important thing. We had an emergency artist fund and we raised $105,000 that we gave out in small grants, $200 to $500 grants, to literally hundreds of freelance singers, freelance dancers, artists, musicians, performance artists, actors.
Yeah.
But I think that the thing that shocked me when the pandemic first hit, well, because my son was in the middle of a tour in Europe and all of a sudden everything like dried up for him. No work, and no work for all of my musicians. And I thought about the wait staff, the bartenders, the front of house people, the sound people. I thought about all the people that lost their entire livelihoods.
Yes.
The freelance artist community was decimated, and New York lost. A lot of people left. A lot of people left. Yeah. There was no way they could afford to live in New York, which is one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Yes.
And so, you know, we nimbly stepped up and we reconfigured everything we understood about the organization and about the work that we do to meet the challenge of this moment. And I saw unbelievable heroism in the people that I work with in the nation, in the people that marched against hatred in every way, in every shape. I saw unbelievable courage and determination on the part of many people. Which that's why I said this virtual Birdland thing is actually, I've done a lot of great things, you know, got a lot of awards and recognition and blah, blah, blah. But seeing my people rise to the occasion and do for others is the single greatest thing I've ever seen.
I'm speaking with Arturo O'Farrell this week on Upfront Soul. It's a conversation we had a little while ago. We're going to turn now to a great track from his new album with the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. It is called Ana Mashouf. You got Upfront Soul.
What's more important than the groove?
Nothing. Thank you.
just heard a track called Anima Shouf featuring Kuwaiti musician Ghazi Faisal Al-Mulaifi, one of the many beautiful pieces illustrating the global reach of virtual birdland. A great recently released album by Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. We'll return to our conversation with Arturo O'Farrell here on Upfront Soul. I was very grateful to you for starting that Musicians Relief Fund, and even just to raise awareness among people about the horrible toll that the pandemic had. I mean, the last show I saw on the last day before we locked down was at a venue that was their last show, and they're gone now.
Yeah, venues closed.
Yeah.
Venues closed. We lost the Jazz Standard, which was a very important nightclub in New York, because it kind of was a midway point between corporate jazz and fringe, and it kind of served a real niche purpose and helped a lot of people launch their careers. I mean, we almost lost Birdland. Birdland's opening its doors July, and there will be a Latin jazz component on Sunday starting in July.
Wow. It's bittersweet. I'm so grateful that you are all able to be there in person, but as someone who is rather physically far flung from New York, does this mean that virtual Birdland is going to wrap? Or I would
no. Oh, are you kidding me?
Oh,
no,
good.
I've made a commitment. This is not a replacement medium.
Yeah,
it is not. It is a new medium, and it's one that we need to learn how to be creative in. And it's one that is truly important, and precisely because not everybody can jump on a plane and go to Birdland. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that we've learned is that virtual Birdland, we have to continue. We may scale back and do one new episode a month or two new episodes a month, but we definitely will continue to develop our whole. There's a whole thing called Agile Digital Village, and we have master classes and education events. We have educational residencies in schools. I mean, we've really decided, and I think most organizations have found out, that this is by no means the end of the online presence. In fact, it's the very beginning of it. Mm-hmm. And if you really want to be democratic and global, you will care about those entities that don't have access. What we want to do is figure out a way to contribute to the planet, to the global reality. Yeah. And that's such a central part of my philosophy as an artist, that, that we do not live in the United States. We live in the world. I'm determined more than ever that if I really believe what I say, that art is in service to others, then that we have to create art that serves humanity. And we can't do that if we're just playing on Birdland on Sunday nights. You know, we're about to make a big commitment to digital production and hire a digital person and create like massive loads of online content, because I think that is an important part of an artist statement. And then it's an aesthetic that can no longer be denied, you know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of borders and borderlessness, we watched with great interest and enjoyment the debut in the last installment of Virtual Birdland of your Arturo O'Farrell and Borderless Friends, the Shapeshifter Sessions. Can you talk a little bit about that experience and sort of revisiting that Ofrendengo at the Wall concept, but in obviously a very different way? And I'm just curious about how that felt and how it felt to be in person for that recording.
Sunday, 3 years ago to the date, we were in Tijuana, at the border of Tijuana and San Diego, recording and performing at a festival called Fandango Fronterizo. So we were actually gathered on either side of the fence. Some of us were in the United States side, some of us were on the Mexican side, and we were performing and celebrating community and life and joy and family and Pueblo. And it was the man who founded this festival is absolutely unbelievably brilliant. This is artivism of the highest level. Imagine using the very elements of oppression and separation, the border guards, the chicken wire, the patrol dogs. Those were the very elements that he fused together to create unity and love and community. And so I went there and we recorded an album, and a book was written, and a documentary was released on HBO Max called Fandango at the Wall. And it's an amazing documentary. I highly recommend it to see it. It's beautiful, beautiful film, and it's a beautiful experience. And these musicians from Veracruz are unbelievable artists, and it's just artistry of the highest level. We did this project with them, and then we were supposed to tour it. As a matter of fact, we were supposed to play the University of San Diego on March 13th.
Wow.
On March 11th, it was canceled. On March 12th, everything was canceled. You know, it literally, we saw a year of bookings disappear. But the movie came out, and it came out, and we wanted to celebrate it with the people. We were supposed to play a concert in the fall at the Soraya at the California State University Northridge. And of course that was canceled, but the folks at the Soraya were gracious enough to allow us to film a documentary about something called the Shapeshifter Sessions, where we recreated that concert that we would have performed at Cal State Northridge, but in a little sacred performing art space in Brooklyn called the Shapeshifter Lab. And so we had this wonderful crew. We came together basically in a warehouse in the dead of winter and performed this music and had special guests. And it was the first time that we'd gone together. It was COVID protocol, safety up the wazoo. I mean, it was really, really rigidly controlled environment, but we had to keep the doors open, and it was like 40 degrees outside, 30 degrees outside. Musicians are in their overcoats. We're playing with gloves.
Oh, yeah, we saw that. Talk plus about technical challenges.
Plus, there was palpable fear. The vaccine hadn't been rolled out. The vaccine was nowhere near being rolled out. Nobody knew who had it. And all we knew was that we had to get tested before we could do it. But that even at that point, the protocols for testing were very hazy, and some people did it and some people didn't. And we just didn't know, because you could be tested and then overnight be exposed to it. Yeah. So the women and men of the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra and our guests and friends actually faced the possibility of becoming ill and coming together to play. And in a way, the Arturo Farrell and Borders friends, that the Shapeshifter Sessions, that film really captures the grit and kind of the fear and the kind of, but also the joy that we have of playing together for the first time since March 8th, 2020.
Wow.
So, you know, and then the other miraculous thing is that we took footage of our virtual Birdland Son Jarocho sessions and projected it on the wall of Shapeshifter and isolated the tracks in our headphones, and were able to play, as it were, in real time along with those musicians in Veracruz. So you see the musicians projected on the wall, and we're playing to them. We're playing to them. And it's, and you know, and then of course we had one of the Villalobos brothers record in Barcelona. And I think that in time, that will be a very important documentary of a time when musicians were really doing extraordinary things to create a magic for others. And, you know, I'm not patting myself on the back. Believe me, it was not altruism. It was actually survival time. And the way we survive is by affirming our family, affirming our community, affirming those whom we serve. That is not altruism. That's selfishness, because we want to keep the thing going. We want to keep it going for ourselves, for our people. And that's how we get ourselves through the finish line. I have my dear friend Cornel West. You know, I asked him, I said, man, how do we deal with this? How do we deal with this Black Lives Matter moment and George Floyd and the pandemic? And how do we deal with this? He looked at me and he said, overcoming by overloving. You know, and that made so much sense to me.
Yeah.
Show up, straighten your back, stand upright, and love one another through the finish line. That's the thing. That's the thing that we tried to do with that Shapeshifter Sessions, the thing we've been trying to do, and the thing we're trying to do, the thing that I try to do every day.
You're hearing my recent conversation with Arturo O'Farrell, the band leader, composer and pianist who guides the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra on their wonderful new album, Virtual Birdland. We're going to hear Arturo's composition, Gulub Hamon, here on Upfront Soul. We just heard Gulab Hamon by Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. The title's a mashup of two of Arturo's favorite cuisines, Indian and Spanish. We are returning now to my conversation with Arturo O'Farrell. We caught up a little while ago to talk about the new album and the joys and challenges of making music during the pandemic here on Upfront Soul. It's wonderful to have the documentary of the Shapeshifter sessions to see that moment of coming together. And I think it's going to be so important for future generations, you know, when we look back on this time, which the documentary of the Shapeshifter sessions will really be something for future generations to be looking back on, and for us who've been through it. I mean, when we get a year away from this point, wherever we are at that point, you know, it will be so important to be able to look back on how we all have been getting through.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I, you know, some of us did not make it through. And I know of people who were, you know, actually got the disease and died. Yeah. And so, you know, it's easy to take this moment and kind of get ready for the "where were you during COVID" t-shirts. You know, mm-hmm. That's going to happen. They're going to issue the "where were you during COVID" t-shirts. And people will forget, and they won't remember the utter humanity of this thing that in reality affected every single person on earth. And that is the great equalizer. When you realize that you are connected, interconnected to someone in Indonesia, to someone in Brazil, to someone in Russia. What do you think? I'm going to hate my Russian counterparts after this year? You better believe I'm not. I'm not going to do it.
Yes.
Not after this year. No. There's an old saying that I really, I don't know if I heard it or made it up, or I don't know. I think it's an old saying. I said, until you see your face in the face of your enemy, you cannot have compassion.
Right.
And knowing, seeing humans all worry about getting their kids off to school in the morning, all worry about cooking, marrying, dying, giving birth, seeing humans, that this is what occupies all of us, is the day-to-day rituals of our lives. And if we don't see those rituals in the faces of those we disdain, then we've lost our way.
Yeah. And, you know, you in the Virtual Birdland concert series, and then also in this album, you know, you're bringing together people who do live all around the world. Were the people, the musicians you've included that are in other locations in the globe, are those musicians that you had connections with before this project started, or are some of those musicians who left New York and went elsewhere? I'm just curious about just the logistics of that.
It's a combination of both. I've had, you know, the privilege of doing really huge projects periodically. I get to do Fandango at the Wall, and the musicians in Veracruz are wonderful. So we were able to use technology to bring them into Virtual Birdland. But I've done a fair bit of traveling, and we were able to work with incredible musicians of Kuwait, Abu Dhabi. And some of our musicians, for instance, our lead alto player had to move to Madrid. Because of health issues with somebody in their family. And so, you know, we're still able to play with Roman Filiu, who's one of the great, really one of the great alto saxophonists of our time, but he's in Madrid. Our percussionist left New York. It's really difficult. Two of our percussionists are both our percussionists. One of them is in Switzerland and the other one's in Peru. So they're doing this for survival purposes, because they can't not work. Can't not work. And so they found some way to subsist elsewhere. Our family is flung all over the place. We have our singer Malika Zara, who recorded from Paris, and we had one of our episodes involved a great, great, great talent, a brilliant young composer, trumpet player named Yaz Ahmed, who recorded with us from, she's of Bahrainian ancestry, and she recorded her parts from somewhere outside of London in the countryside. So, and you know, we've actually been able to make music that we never would have been able to make any other way.
Right.
And that's what we remember when I was talking about finding a way not to replicate with this technology, but finding a new way to create with this technology. Well, that's like a little glimpse of that. We can imagine incredible collaborations that we never would have been able to do. And that's called thinking out of the box. That's called creating something for the purpose of creating something new. And that's also been one of the big tropes in my head. One of the fugues is do new art, push the progress, push it forward, help people come along with you. Comfort, challenge. And so for me, the idea of finding new ways to use art, new ways to speak art, new ways to use technology, new art forms. Yeah. You know, I have this crazy, crazy dream of interdisciplinary art making. I want to do a concert with a culinary edge to it and have a chef on stage creating, improvising dishes as we play.
Nice.
You know, and then having those, that food served to the audience. I mean, I want to build a concert hall where the audience is sprinkled wherever they want to sit in the band, you know, stuff like that. It's just, to me, that progressing vision is as important as anything, any value I hold. So it was easy to do this kind of international collaboration.
Yeah, it must have been hard, I would imagine, to pick the songs that you were going to include in this album. I was just thinking about all of the songs that you featured through Virtual Birdland over the last year plus, and the musicians that you were able to include from all around the world. I would imagine that it must have been a creative and maybe even an emotional challenge to figure out how to select what you were going to present in just one album. Was that difficult or what, or not?
You know, it's funny. I'll tell you an inside story. I'm also a college professor and an associate dean for equity, diversity, and inclusion. And I run a nonprofit and I do all. So at some point I realized that I really needed help. And so I asked my son, who's an incredible trumpet player, Adam, to be associate artistic director. And so, you know, he has actually done by far the majority of the lifting in terms of repertoire choice. And he checks in everything with me. But what we basically did was take what we thought was that same curatorial model that I told you about before. Comfort, challenge. So we put a little bit of spice in and then maybe made it more palatable. And so the aesthetic for picking these things was, first of all, which ones were the best recordings. That's the first thing. Which ones were technically the highest quality. And then we kind of used the idea that we would do a new piece. Some, like, who in the world expected Caligi Cuban mixtures of, like, you know, Kuwaiti percussionists and Cuban percussionists? And we did that. And of course, some people left them cold. So for those people, we put in Tito Puente's Para Los Rumberos.
Right.
And that's kind of been my model all along anyway. That, like, I think that I stand on the shoulders of great, great men, and women. Yeah. That have changed my life. And they, when they did it, when Celia Cruz first started singing, she was doing something new. Mm-hmm. And so I can't just replicate or mimic Celia Cruz. I can't do that. I have to take the spirit of a Celia Cruz or a Tito Puente or a Graciela or a Machito or a Dizzy Gillespie. And I have to, or a Carla Bley. And I have to stand on their shoulders and not replicate them, because when they did their thing, they were not replicating. Mm-hmm. Trust me, Carla does not replicate. And and so for me, the privilege has really been about this, choosing this music has been guided by that principle of building, because we want I respect our audiences. Yes. I don't think they're going to flee and run in fear from something new.
Right.
I respect people way too much to just placate them. Here's another mambo. Here's another salsa classic. No. I respect my audiences, and I want them to grow along with me and reach newer understandings of what this music could be and where it could go.
Well, and I love what you say about that tension of, you know, comfort and challenge. And that, I think, is not only marks you as a great musician, but also that the educator, the communicator in you, because when you do include both of those elements, you can move someone to a new appreciation or a new understanding or even an encounter with something that if they looked at it on paper, they might think, oh, I'm not going to enjoy this experience.
It's funny. I think it's just good citizenry. It's good. Yeah. It's good. It's a good way to keep a marriage alive. It's a good way to keep a business partner happy. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to interact with somebody. You know, you need to take care of people. And you also need to help them and challenge them. And you need to be challenged when it's your time to be challenged, and comforted when it's your time to be comforted. Mm. You know, the dynamics of human interaction are very, very, very volatile. And it's easy to get really stuck in either being a challenger or a comforter. Mm-hmm. And you know, and this is what I was, you know, frequently in marriage, certainly someone has to be the driver sometimes and the passenger at other times. And I really believe that that's a dynamic that applies to curating. It's a dynamic that applies to programming. It's a dynamic that applies to all human interaction. Mm-hmm. Be the driver sometimes, be the passenger sometimes. Know when to support, know when to challenge. Know this. And most of all, because you care about the people that you're serving.
Yeah. Well, it's really comes through in the music that you've chosen and the way you present it through the Virtual Birdland concert series and in this album. Do you have a favorite? This is a terrible question to ask.
Because you know I'm going to say mine. I love that piece. I really do. But if I were not good, if I was going to take my piece out of that contest, I think my favorite one is Alafia, which is the piece, the Afro-Brazilian piece written by Letieres Leche. Mm-hmm. There's something so unbelievably bold about it and compelling and simple. It would be either that one or the Papo Vazquez piece, El Cimarron, mm-hmm. because both of them, but precisely for the same reasons I doubt my prowess as a composer, because those pieces are bold and very simple and clear and direct. And I tend to overwrite. I tend to go towards too much information. So I really love Cimarron and Alafia because I think they're somehow making that grand gesture and being clear is something that evades me.
This hour of Upfront Soul, we are in conversation with Arturo O'Farrell, the leader of the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. We're going to listen to a track from Virtual Birdland, one of Arturo's favorites from the album. It's called Cimarron. That was Cimarron, a great track from Virtual Birdland, a recent album by Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. We will come to the conclusion of our interview with Arturo O'Farrell now on Upfront Soul. There's such a wonderful range in the album. I'm very glad to hear that you were continuing to, you will be continuing the Virtual Birdland series and continuing to think about ways that we can all be together from greater distances. But I'm curious about your feelings going into this. We're right on this cusp of in-person music again. And I'm just curious about your reflections at this strange moment.
The first time that I played in a club recently, I lost it. I started to introduce the band and I started weeping. Just that there is a visceral need for us to see each other and hug each other and shake hands and respect the distance that some people want, and also just like just visually to see a human being was huge. Just huge to see a human being that yes. isn't my wife or my child. Yes. It's just huge. And he's not a child anymore. He's 26.
They're always your children.
Yeah, it's true. I think that and it's funny because I did it. I went to visit a friend's 70th birthday and he had a porch concert. And I felt really nervous about being around a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I'm prone to being ADHD and I'm prone to being easily distracted in crowds. Mm-hmm. So there's that part of it. But there's also the reality that this is new. We haven't done this in a while. And it's going to take a minute to get back into feeling comfortable in a room full of strangers. I think it will happen. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll always have a vestige of this reality. We'll always have a vestige of the fact that we as a nation have been divided by a disease, by a pandemic, and by a political disease and a political pandemic, mm-hmm. and that we will never look at ourselves the same way again. Mm-hmm. There will be an unease for years to come, mm-hmm. if it ever goes away, and if maybe it wasn't meant to go away, it wasn't meant to not be there. But I think cautious optimism and sustained commitment to experiencing life in a new way is what's going to get us through.
Yeah. Well, that's very well spoken. I know it was very strange. I bought my first tickets in 15 months. And I then listened to a live album shortly after I bought these tickets, and I'm confronted. It's not until the end of July, but just having tickets again. And I listened to, the musician saying, "It's so good to be here with you tonight." And I started to cry in my living room, and I know when I'm actually with people again at a concert, I'm going to pack a large box of Kleenex for
sure. And it's funny because it's beginning to happen. We're playing the Newport Jazz Festival this year with the family band. And I started curating a series at a club, and the Birdland Sundays will begin anew. And we're actually even doing a tour of the West Coast with the big band. And we're supposedly going to Europe, to Switzerland, and slowly but surely things are coming back. And I think that it is very emotional, but we need to really remember that we have music. It's a gift. We need to step up to the plate and show up and do our parts. And that's the audience's part and the musician's part and the presenters and the sound men and the people who drive the vans back to the hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We all show up and we all do our job because that is how we love each other through the finish line.
Thank you. Yes, that is so well spoken. Thank you for those words. It's a community, and music is an art or community that extend beyond performers and whoever is sitting in the audience. It's such a large network, and we all need to remember that we are part of that, and that we can carry ourselves and each other through.
That's right. That we're part of each other. Yeah. That we're inextricably intertwined, and our lives can never be separated. Yeah. Even by digital reality.
Yeah. Well, that ethos comes through so much in your music, and I want to thank you for all that you have done to bring that spirit into the world as a performer, as an educator, as a curator, and to thank you for sharing Virtual Birdland with us and for continuing to share it, and to thank you for this album, which is going to bring this music to, I know, a wider audience too. And I'm just excited by everything about this project and what you've been doing. So thanks for taking the time to talk about it today.
No, thank you, Susan, for the opportunity to talk to you and to your listeners, and for the really, I mean, this is the reason for the season, man, just to share, just to sit and share with somebody.
Thank you so much. It's just been a joy to speak with you. And thank you so much for joining us here on Upfront Soul, Arturo O'Farrell.
Upfront Soul, you heard it. That's what it is. It's upfront.
Thank you for listening to our wide-ranging and wonderful conversation with Arturo O'Farrell, leader of the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. I do hope you've enjoyed the show as we pay tribute to Hispanic Heritage Month here on Upfront Soul. I hope you'll check out Virtual Birdland, perhaps even tune in to their weekly concerts online. I also wanted to share the exciting news of Arturo's debut as a Blue Note recording artist. His new album, Dreaming in Lions, is out now. Thanks again for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week. And always do remember, if you get knocked down, don't stay down. Get up and get down. Upfront Soul comes to you from Community Radio WERU-FM, Blue Hill, Maine, Wabanaki Territory.
How that sound, Sam?
That sounds nice.